Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. We would like to talk about this idea that cats, dogs, birds, maybe other kinds of animals, but especially cats, dogs, and birds, have a capacity to care about us, to love us. And we would like to hear from you. If you have an example of an animal, a companion animal, that demonstrated in some way that he or she understood you, understood your feelings, saw that you were in danger, even saved you in some instance. Our guest, our returning guest, longtime contributor on this show, Dr. Todd Friedland, who's been a vet in North Windham, Connecticut, forever.
For decades.
And so Todd is back on the show. Todd, we have a Facebook message. You just search the Faith Middleton Show on Facebook from Maria McGowan, who said, "When I had to put one of my cats down, my other cat was meowing and kissing me as I sobbed." She said, "They know." So how do you feel about this? You're a vet, and so you don't want to be in the business of, you know, foisting human emotions, because I know that's a sensitive topic in veterinary medicine. On the other hand, we all see these things, and it's beyond anecdote.
Oh, no, it is beyond, and that's an interesting way for you to put this, because if we go to the experts, now I have a cynical definition of experts. They're people who learn more and more about less and less until they learn everything there is to know about nothing. But well, when you're near a university, that's the kind of stuff you sometimes bump into. But in any event, the experts with cats in particular say that cats are asocial, not antisocial. They're asocial. And in the wild, they live alone except for breeding and fighting. Otherwise, they're never with another cat. And they'll teach that in school today, that cats are asocial, that they don't have this emotional tie to their owners. That's the textbook. However, the reality is, in some cats it's true. Some cats could care less. As long as you feed them and you do what they want, they'll let you live in their house. But there are a lot of cats out there that do exactly this. I mean, Maria was her name. I agree, and I hear about this a lot, more so with dogs than with cats. Whether it's love or a sense of neediness, I'm not really sure, but it happens so many times. And some of it doesn't have to involve crisis, that cats will come up and lay in your lap. They have 2,500 square feet to go pick a place to lay down and purr, but they'll come and they'll lay in your lap and they'll lick your neck or they'll lick your ear and they'll smell you and they'll just, I don't know that when those cats are in my arms, I don't know that they could be that content out of my arms. So how do you define that? I define it sometimes as need, and sometimes I really think pets love or care for or something other people and certain people and families more than others.
I heard a psychologist, Todd Friedland, talking once about this idea that people don't understand very much, that cats and dogs are needy and that people go to get them thinking that the animals are going to do nothing but give love, when in fact they require it. You know, they are the ones who are the needier of the two. And so it's not going to be that this animal, that's going to be the dynamic of the relationship.
Right.
You have to know this going in, that it's probably going to be much more the opposite way.
Yes, and with dogs, you know, there are dogs that are born to be the leaders, and there are dogs that are born to be the followers. And the dogs that are the followers do need that love and attention. That's what they need. If they didn't need it, they would be the leaders. So there's a lot of dogs out there that we adopt that really do need that they need to be loved. That's what they need. Take that dog, tie it outside to a tree all day long with water and shelter so you obey the laws. Have that dog be alone all the time, and that dog will be a different dog than if you had its clone that was given the affection during the day that these dogs need. It'll be a different dog.
Mm. So we're interested in hearing from you about whether you've ever had an experience or witnessed something where a cat or a dog demonstrated that that animal loved you, that animal saw that you needed something and tried to provide it, tried to comfort you in some way, perhaps tried to save you. I had a friend, Prudence Brown, who had the most remarkable golden retriever. And I would see this dog all the time, and she would take this dog to Dog Hill in Central Park, you know, where all the dogs would romp and play, and their owners. And there were two dogs that got in a vicious fight with each other. And Prudence stood up to go over and try and separate these two fighting dogs. And her dog jumped up, grabbed the back of her hood, her sweatshirt hood, pulled it as hard as he could until she fell back down on her butt. He sat her back down on the ground. In other words, don't go near those fighting dogs. This dog was remarkable in many, many ways, you know, quite an intuitive, smart dog. But really, to see something like that was extraordinary.
Right, and so there's a leader dog right there that said, I'm taking control of this situation, and my job is to protect my owner. Now, some of that's instinctive, and some of that is some kind of caring. So we can call it love, I think.
203-776-9677. 203-776-WNPR. If you have an example where you believe that an animal in some way showed that it cared for you, loves you, and was trying to communicate that it saw you were in need in some way, let us know. 203-776-9677. We're testing out a theory here on the show. Have you seen this among your clients?
Oh, sure.
Todd,
I can tell you.
Family, or?
I have two examples. One is my mom. My mom used to get migraine headaches, and it would shut her down for 3 days. And we had this mixed breed, boxer mixed breed dog, Boots. It was my childhood dog, because of her little white feet, you know, and she was a boxer mix. Now, my mom would get these migraines, not very frequently, but 3 days. She was down and out in bed, didn't eat, didn't drink. And people that are out there that have migraines, I don't, fortunately, they probably can understand. But Boots would go and lay by the side of her bed. And for the 3 days, the dog didn't eat, the dog didn't drink. It would get up, it would check on her, it would lay back down again. And this sounds like, okay, maybe that's what this dog does. But Dad was in a body cast for 4 months with a disc. That's the way they used to treat it. Dog could care less. When I was homesick, dog, and I was the one that played with the dog all the time, Boots could care less. When my two brothers were sick or injured, you know, we were all boys, things happened to us, the dog could care less. But when Mom got a migraine headache or got sick, that dog was always right there. Whatever this word means to a dog, loving and caring for my mother. It was just absolutely amazing. And it was, and this dog was not a dog we raised. This dog we got as an adult dog, and it just figured this out somehow.
Wow.
It was spooky.
Yeah. Bethany, Faith Middleton with vet Dr. Todd Friedland from North Windham, Connecticut. Welcome to the show, Bethany.
Hi.
Hi.
This is a quick story about receiving love and how even the smallest animals, I think, are capable. And you might think I'm crazy. I know my husband does. But we had a gerbil who recently died. I have a dog, too. That's a whole other story. But the gerbil who recently died fell on its back, and we knew that he was going to die that evening. And we placed the gerbil comfortably in his bedding, and we pet him for a very long time as he settled down and passed. And it was so interesting to me how, you know, we didn't know how he would react to this. He is not a gerbil that we played with very much. But we had this really beautiful experience comforting this rodent during the last hours of his life. And his eyes were open and he was looking at us. And it was really amazing to see even this smallest creature receive love. So I guess, for us, it was about, you know, may all beings be happy kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really unexpected and amazing. And it made us feel like, gee, I hope we gave this guy a good enough life all these years.
Yeah.
Well, you did. And, yeah. And what's really important, see, we don't really know what petting means to animals. You know, do they, I mean, dogs certainly seem to like it. Cats, I'm not really sure. Some of them like it, some of them don't. But and iguanas were told that petting is annoying to them. Now, don't ask me who makes these things up. I don't know. But so we don't know what petting meant to your pet gerbil. But if your pet gerbil was, I'm going to take this somewhere else for you. If this pet gerbil seemed relaxed to you and passed peacefully, look at what that gerbil did to you. I mean, look at the experience. Look at what you're very excited about what you're telling me right now. Look at what that little gerbil did to you in 2 hours.
And that's exactly right. And yeah. it was really very special, and the children appreciated it too. And it just, for me, it had to do with how all beings are capable, even the very smallest, of receiving love, and our pets do teach us that.
So why do we treat the gerbil that way and put our grandparents in nursing homes? You'll have to answer that for me on another show one day.
Well, that's true.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks
for calling. Your story. Appreciate it very much. 203-776-9677. We're talking about animals that communicated to you in some way that they loved you back, and maybe did something to care for you. Todd, I think I mentioned to you that I might have said this on an earlier show, so forgive me if this is a repeat, but I had a friend, and we were on the beach having a picnic, and we were there with her dog, who is a rescue. And she really hadn't had him that long, maybe 6 months. Mm-hmm. And he's from another country. You know, she rescued him from far away and on a plane. And all, you know, so we're on the beach together. There's nobody around. And my friend falls and can't get up. And I can't lift her. And we're trying to figure out what to do. It's pitch black. There's nobody in sight on this beach. And the car is a bit of a distance away. And so my friend says, I'm going to try to crawl. And inch by inch, she crawled. That dog gets down on his haunches and moved inch by inch with her. He wouldn't go ahead. He didn't lag behind. He didn't lose interest. He saw she was in trouble. And I think he knew we're now together. Right. And you're in trouble, and I'm not going to leave your side.
And the question is, what is that to a dog? Is that sense of duty? Is it that objective, that it's sense of duty? Is it caring? Is it love? It's all of the above.
It took an hour to go that distance from where we were on the beach to the car, crawling. And that dog stayed and did it for every inch.
And
inch
if it was 2 hours, it would have done the same thing.
Amazing.
Yeah, and absolutely. If it was hungry, it wouldn't have asked for anything to eat. No, it's incredible. But we don't know what it really is, but there's got to be some other component other than just objectivity, sense of duty.
But why do we look at an animal and say that? We don't know what it is. If a human did that, we wouldn't
right.
be saying,
so
what is
that? So we put words to it. Because we really don't – I've never been a dog, so I don't know what it was. But it certainly looks like a lot of the same – human emotions emotions that humans have.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then Dr. Todd Friedland is back, and we'd love to hear more stories where a cat, a dog, some animal of yours showed you that it was caring for you, loved you in some specific way. We'll be right back. You can find out what we talk about on this show online anytime, including right now at WNPR.org. Right now, in fact, you can see all kinds of delicious recipes for dinner, value wines, easy cocktails, and much more. Click on programs at WNPR.org for the Faith Middleton Show. Longtime contributor Dr. Todd Friedland is back with us, and we're talking this time about, we might get to this issue of holidays and pets as presents. Maybe not such a great idea. But we're talking right now about an incident you might have had or witnessed where an animal has said to you, I see that you're in trouble, you're hurting, I'm giving you love in some specific way. I think we all have had experiences like this, and we're not sure, you know, what does that mean? Todd, you had the dog Pepper.
Right.
I met Pepper. Pepper came on the show.
Sweet little Shih Tzu, yep. We put her to sleep about, I don't know, right about the time we had our show. I think it was the week, 6 weeks ago, so about 6.5 weeks ago.
Mm.
We put her down.
Oh, sorry.
It was horrible, but it was okay. I mean, it was just time.
How old is she?
She was 15.
Wow.
It was her time.
So, what about Pepper? You said you have another...
Well, Mona, Pepper was not a dog that you could put in a cage. So, when we went away, we couldn't just leave her at the animal hospital. She'd be miserable. So, one of my receptionists loved this dog. I brought Pepper to work with me, and Pepper sat on Karen's lap all day, every day, and Karen just fell in love with this dog. So she volunteered to take Pepper whenever we went away. As a matter of fact, she would almost pay us to go away so she could have Pepper. Her father was dying, Karen's father was dying of Alzheimer's disease or had advanced Alzheimer's. And so whenever, now there's multiple people in the house, there's younger people in the house, but Pepper every night needed to sleep on this gentleman's bed. And this went on for several years. But at the very end, when we went away for 2 weeks and I didn't even know what to do because I knew Pepper's time was coming. It was heart failure. And I really didn't want to lay this thing, you know, this dog on Karen, but she insisted. And her father passed away during the time we were away. And the only time this man was comfortable was when Pepper was on his bed. And the only time Pepper was comfortable was when Pepper was on his bed. And she would seek him out at night to be with him or whatever at night. During the day, everything's okay because there are other people. But when the man was alone, Pepper was there on the bed. Now, what's that?
Yeah.
What is that?
What is that?
That's some kind of caring. And then caring is a form of love. It has to be. It is in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I call it. Love.
Yeah. So
this is unsolicited. This is not putting the dog on the bed. This is the dog seeking out.
I'm going to tell you something similar in a nursing home in just a minute. We're going to go to Anthony this time. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thanks. Glad you're on the show.
I got a fantastic story for you guys. I recently moved my mother up from Pennsylvania. She's in a in-home hospice care, and we have an 8-year-old golden retriever, Max, and Max has never met my mother, and my mother was, when I got back to Pennsylvania, they said she had 2 hours to live, so that didn't come to fruition, but in any event, we got her back here to Connecticut, and since we've moved my mother into our house, Max, who never met my mother, hasn't left my mother's side yet.
And how long has that been?
It's going on 4.5 weeks now.
Okay.
And it's the funniest thing, you know, my mom is she's really ill and she's frail and everything. And, her hand sometimes sticks out of the bed and Max will just go up and he'll make my mother pet him, you know, to the point where she actually wakes up and realizes it's the dog, you know, petting himself against her, but he has yet to leave her side. I mean, we take her, you know, we got her in better health now, but excuse me for breathing heavy. I'm working, but I just had to share this story.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question for you. What would you call this dog? What would you call the emotion that this dog has when it goes up and wants or needs to be pet? What do you see that as?
I don't see it as much as him wanting to be petted as it. I see it as him wanting to. I see it as him wanting her to feel him there, you know.
Yeah, caring for your mother.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he lays down by her every night. I mean, the first 2 nights we had her home, Max actually got up in the bed with her, you know, hospital bed, and we had to stop that, you know, because he's a 70-pound dog, you know. But he's at her side. I mean, the only time he leaves her side is if we actually have to get him out of the room when her
You mentioned that your mother is doing better. It's 4.5 weeks, and she's stable now medically. How much of that is medicine, and how much of that is your dog?
You know what? We talk about that. And, you know, my mother came from a very bad spot, and that's why I had to get her up here. She was in a terrible, terrible spot. But we moved her up here, and I'm going to tell you something. I guarantee you that what that dog is doing for my mother means more than any pill or, you know what I mean?
It's I submit that your mother loves you, but she gets up in the morning for the dog.
You know, it's the funniest thing. We took her off of a morphine pump, so she's regaining her senses. She was in a fog there for quite a while, and she's regaining her senses. So her and the dog actually have conversations in the room. We have a monitor hooked up, you know, baby monitor, so we could just listen in on her and just make sure everything's okay during the night. Yeah. And she talks to the dog. She, you know, they have conversations, you know. Just.
So how did you feel? How did you feel moving down a notch on the totem pole when your mother came to the house?
But I'll tell you what, he is a fantastic dog. He always has been a fantastic dog. But
now you know.
He's an 8-year-old golden, but I've never seen him step up to the plate like this with anybody else, you know, ever before. And it was without command. And he's never met my mother.
Great story. Call me next year your mom's still alive and the dog's petting.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Anthony.
I listen to your show all the time, too, by the way. You guys are great.
Thank you.
All right, thank
bye-bye.
You. Okay. So you're reminding me, and so is Anthony, of a guest we had on the show. This is a man who is a doctor. He's the medical director at a nursing home in New Hampshire. And the nursing home has a cat, and the cat's name is Oscar. And he writes a kind of memoir because of the extraordinary thing that this cat did. This cat would sense that someone in the nursing home was at the end. And so if it was the last day or hours, the cat would appear in the person's room, the person who was just about to die, jump up on the bed. And, you know, among the medical staff, they began to say, uh-oh, if they saw Oscar going into a room and not coming out and just staying there. And he had this amazing sense and would not leave the side of this person for as long as it took, you know, as a kind of escort. To whatever plane is next, you know, whatever that is.
We don't know what it is. And, you know, we're learning now about animals. Dogs can sense cancer before any test can. So the issue is that there's sensitivities that these animals have that we don't really understand. And that's one of them. And that's not an unusual story. You know, it's just amazing. You said this cat did a marvelous thing. What I would, again, submit is that every day, if you polled those residents, that cat did a marvelous thing for somebody every single day. Even if it was just walking in the room, rubbing against the bed and walking out, there was a smile or something to some of those residents.
Yeah, I know sometimes these facilities have to be careful because people have allergies and it's dangerous for some people. But I think what a shame that you can't have pets in these places because it does seem to do so much for people. Marilyn, Faith Middleton with Dr. Todd Friedland, the vet from North Windham, Connecticut. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Marilyn.
Great, thanks. Good to have you on the show.
I have two dogs and two cats. I've had dogs my whole life, and I got a little dog story for you. When I first had my son, we had two dogs, a chocolate lab and a golden retriever. And we put him in a bassinet in the living room for neighbors to come and see him. And, you know, I was a little nervous about the dogs because they'd never really been around an infant before. Well, the first neighbor came over to see him, and my chocolate lab grabbed her by the arm of her shirt as she walked over. He just held her. He didn't bite her. He just like nibbled but continued to hold the shirt of her arm as she went over to the bassinet. And then he went under the bassinet and just laid there. He was guarding that baby.
No question.
He was guarding, and those dogs guarded those children.
Yeah, it's hardwired too.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I have a cat now who, when my daughter was little, she found her, and she brought her home. It was a stray. And when my daughter used to cry and get upset, no matter where that cat was in the house, it would come running in and get really close to her and rub his her body against my daughter's leg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is that a sense of need? Is it love? Is it caring? I don't think you can nail it down to any one of those things. It's probably a little bit of all. But I do have a question for you. Those are great stories. You have two 60-pound-plus dogs, and you have a 10-pound cat. Who runs the house?
The cat.
Got it. I just had to bring that up because it's so cool.
She's 15. She has feline AIDS. She has diabetes. She periodically goes blind every once in a while, but she still rules this house.
Really? Hey, do me a favor with the blindness. Have your veterinarian check blood pressure.
I will. I will. She's got a lot of complications.
Yeah, but blood pressure issues can do that, and that's very controllable with a medication.
Well, she's on insulin, too.
Yeah,
so
yeah, but I'm just
okay.
Check. Yeah, it's perfectly okay. It's all okay.
Are you saying that if you control the blood pressure that her sight can come back?
Yeah,
they
get ruptured capillaries in the back of the eye, and they lose their sight.
It happens once every 4 months. It just all of a sudden it happens, and it goes away within
a
few hours.
Just check. It may not be anything you can do anything about, but if it's blood pressure, you give them just a small dose of amlodipine, which is what they use in people for this, and then the problem generally stops. So it's just worth checking out next time you're in.
Thank you.
I will call the vet soon.
All right. Thanks for the story.
Thank
you.
Yep.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 203-776-9677. I certainly have had the experience of crying over something and having a cat or a dog just come racing over. That the animal sees that I'm upset and is distressed that I'm distressed. There is no question. I've had this happen repeatedly.
I think it might start out as curiosity, but you can see animals do get distressed over people getting distressed. Going back to the scientists who tell us that faith, that's baloney. They want to taste your tears or whatever they want. It's not baloney. It's not baloney. It happens too many times with too many different cats and a gerbil.
Do clients tell you this also?
Every day. I mean, we our last show, we talked a little bit about euthanasia. That's nothing they teach us in school, you know. When I mentor kids, I say, look, I know why you're here, but you have to watch my relationship with people, not pets, because that's how you're successful.
You know, there are stories of dogs and cats alerting household members that something is wrong in the house. I mean, maybe we'll hear some of this on this show. Patty, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, Faith.
Hi, Patty. Go ahead.
I wanted to share a story that's similar to the other callers about the child, but it's about my dog, and it seemed to demonstrate a sense of responsibility or protection. And this happened when my son was about one year old, and he was outside in the playpen sleeping while I was outside hanging up laundry and putzing around in the yard. And I ran into the mudroom that had a window to get some more clothespins or something. And all of a sudden I saw him pacing around the playpen endlessly. And it just was amazing to me to see all of a sudden, you know, the moment I skipped out of the immediate area, he seemed to take over and just pace in circles around the playpen.
So you had, he understood he was supposed to guard.
I guess so. Or he was saying, you dope, why'd you leave the baby, you know, alone for a minute or two? But no, I do think he had a sense of that protectionism.
Sense of duty is very strong in many, many dogs. But again, you go back to this, if you listened early in the show, my childhood dog had no sense of duty with my father or the three boys. We were just dirt in that dog's eyes when it came to being sick. But my mother, I didn't know. I was a kid. So we'd call the veterinarian and say, dog hasn't eaten in 3 days. He goes, when your mother's headache's better, your dog will be fine. That was his answer every time.
Thank you very much, Patty.
Okay,
really.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
Your call. 203-776-9677. Well, here's a story of an animal caring a lot about another animal. My nephew and his wife have dogs that they raise, so they have, you know, 8-12 dogs in any given time. They are crazy about animals, and they live in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. And so they had a sheep outside, and it became, I'm sorry, a goat outside, and the goat became ill and then was dying. And the dog, who otherwise didn't seem to have any particular relationship, not like they were best friends, the goat and the dog, went and laid down next to that goat, and Doug said that that animal did not move for 4 days.
I'm going to tell you, that dog knew that goat was there every day. That goat was there before it ever got sick. But there's this sense that they have, and I just snap my fingers for radio listeners. It gets called upon through that brain instantaneously as fast as I snap my finger. They know. Did he love the goat? I don't know. Maybe he did. Maybe he loved the goat all the time, but needed to do something when the goat was sick.
Be a companion.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is incredible.
The whole family was just stunned by the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't gotten a call from somebody who said this is all nonsense, but it really isn't all nonsense. If you hear it day after day after day, it's not nonsense.
Dr. Todd Friedland has been a vet for a long time in North Windham, Connecticut. He's been on this show for a long time also. Jean, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Faith and Doctor. It's good to speak with you this afternoon.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. I have a cat, and he's about, I want to say, around 9 years old. And I have retinopathy from my diabetes, which is an eye condition. And I can actually see pretty good because I have shots, you know, injections
right.
in the eyes every 6 or 8 weeks. And it just helps clear up the cloudiness or the blurriness, I should say. But I mean, in all, I can see fairly well. So I'm grateful. But the cat is constantly jumping up on my lap and looking in my eyes. I think he thinks he's the assistant ophthalmologist.
I have no clue what that's all about.
He is always sticking his nose, practically his nose, in my eye. Because when I say he's looking in my eyes, I don't mean he's just afar. He's literally on my lap, looking right in my eye. I'll be like, T-Max, could you get any closer?
I hope you don't have any deep, dark secrets, because this cat's going to find out.
Well, I'm telling you, it's a riot, because I get paranoid, and I think, gosh, is there something else wrong with me?
Yeah.
Else in there?
I know. I understand that feeling. How amazing.
It's like, is there something I should know? But he does. He sticks his nose as he's looking, because his nose is sticking right there. He's looking right in both
Absolutely
eyes.
Remarkable.
It's a riot. And he does this just about every day. And when I have a shot, he does it even more.
Do you put eye drops in your eyes?
No, not usually.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to figure out if there's some curiosity with a smell
scent,
or a taste.
Yeah.
But apparently not.
Yeah.
He must know.
So like I said, don't think about your deep, dark secrets when that cat's looking in there.
Thank you
now
very
you're
much,
making me.
That's our job.
It's all in jest. That's
make
right.
Make him paranoid.
Have a great day.
Step right up.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break and more stories about how animals tell us that they love us. 203-776-9677. We'll be right back. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. That's FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening. And to our talented team, Senior Producer Lori Mack and Producer Jonathan McNichol. So glad Dr. Todd Friedland is here from his longtime vet practice in North Windham, Connecticut. He's been on the show for so many years. And Todd, I was just remembering that when I was, I think around 12 years old, I had a series of birds, parakeets, and one I brilliantly named Budgie, and it was the first one that I had, and we had this thing, this parakeet and I had this thing, and I would come home from school at pretty much the same time every day, and my mother would keep the cage door of Budgie's cage open, and he pretty much wouldn't leave. But at the exact time when I was coming home, Budgie would fly out of the cage and go to the doorknob And when I came in the door, I would turn the handle and Budgie would be on the other side of the handle. And he'd sort of flutter up in the air when I turned the handle and opened the door, and he would land on my shoulder.
And nobody else he did this to.
Nobody.
Right.
And there were
And there were many birds in your life.
Hang
and
out.
This one did it.
Well, not too many birds in my life.
Right.
You know, I think I had maybe two, maybe three parakeets. But this was such a special relationship.
Yeah, it's not normal bird behavior. So,
no.
So what was that? We don't know what it was, but it was something pretty. Now, were you the only one that fed this bird?
No.
Okay.
No.
So, because that's a big deal. You know, they really like their food providers, but every animal does. But something was there.
Yeah, there was something there.
Yeah, and people can call it undefinable or they can take the liberty to define it. And you could call it love, caring, comfort. Yeah. Call it what you want.
So much like a person, this little tiny parakeet.
Yeah.
Beverly Faith Middleton with Dr. Todd Friedland. Welcome to the show.
No, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You guys kind of stole my thunder before talking about tears and, you know, animals licking your tears. I had a cat for 15 years. We put her down about 3 or 4 months ago, and I felt that it's never good,
right?
So I felt that perhaps to take the focus off of my loss, maybe I could go to an animal rescue place and get one cat. Well, I ended up with a brother and a sister.
Good for you.
And they were 8 weeks old, and you know, they only a couple of months now. And the female had nothing to do with me. I think she was a little bit upset being separated from her other litter mates is what I felt, you know. So I didn't want the babies to be alone that night, so I stayed in the room with them and slept on the couch. And this little female came up and climbed up on my chest, and I just started to cry. And she licked the tears from my face as I was laying there. I'll tell you what, just telling you about this is, you know, it's choking me up. This little girl, you know, saw how sad I was, and that was, you know, that was kind of like an ending point for me. I stopped the grieving and then started to transfer my, you know,
affection. Whatever that was. Mm-hmm. Salt deficiency, if you want to be a scientist about it, but it probably wasn't. But whatever this is a key thing about that a lot of people just don't recognize is pets and people. It's just three words. Mm-hmm. But it's the impact that they have on our lives is I mean, I'm trying to turn this in, you know, yes, the pets are loving us or whatever, but the impact is because you're going to live another 40 years and tell the story with the same compassion you just told it to me.
You know what?
You
know what strikes me about this story too, Beverly, is that this was a kitten, correct?
Yes, she was, and actually, they say that they're 8 weeks when you pick them up, but I think that was pushing it. I think they were weaned. They were about 7 weeks. She was very, very.
That's
very
because small. There's actually a law in Connecticut, an old blue law, that you cannot adopt out a cat under 8 weeks. So
I
they
was
just
very
tell
suspicious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, here's what strikes me about your story. I know of a little boy who, you know, was just past the stage of speaking practically, and he learned that his parents were getting a divorce. And his response was that he sat with the mother and he started singing, making up a song. This little tiny boy singing a story. Mm-hmm. Mommy, I will take care of you.
Oh,
and
my God.
A moving truck will come and I will help you.
Yeah.
And he went ahead. It had chorus and lyrics, and he was making up this story that he sung to her. And you think, really, a child could figure that out? I'm thinking for you, a kitten?
And this was the very first night that she was in the house. You know, I mean, the very first night that she was with me. And P.S., she is just the freshest, nastiest.
Well, is she a calico? Is she a calico cat?
No, it's she's a silver tiger.
Yep.
Thank you so much for calling the show, Beverly.
Thanks
for calling.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Yes,
so if you're just joining us, Dr. Todd Friedland is here from his animal practice in North Windham, Connecticut. He's a vet. He's been on the show for a long time. And we're talking about We certainly know that we love our animals, but what are the ways that they show that they love us, that they care about us, that they want to protect us? We often have these stories about things that they have done. I certainly have read stories and seen people interviewed about dogs and cats that have clearly purposely woken people up when they sense that there's a fire in the house.
These are untrained dogs.
Yeah, well, yeah, these aren't, these are not the ones that are fire-spotting dogs. No,
right.
I mean, these are...
These are just dogs.
Animals that are saying something's wrong, wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie, Faith Middleton with Dr. Friedland. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Faith. Thanks for taking my call. I'm enjoying this show with Dr. Todd and you very much. And I have a lot of stories about German Shepherds, but I'm just going to tell the one that doesn't sound like everyone else's, I guess, you know, or sort of a new take on it, which is that I'm a fourth-generation German Shepherd owner, and probably my fifth generation. My kids will probably have them, too, because they do these kind of things a lot. But one thing that I recall, especially with my first German Shepherd that I had on my own, you know, away from my parents when I was in my early 20s, and I was working, and the dog and I were so, so close. It was like my child. And we went... diving at a grotto where people went, where you could dive off a rock. And I always brought her with me everywhere. And I was a little tentative, and maybe she knew that, but I did it. So I dove off, and I felt this pain in my heel and a scrape. And I came up and realized that she had tried to grab me in the middle of the air. As I was diving, she grabbed my heel, but she would never have bitten me, and she wasn't a biter. But, of course, it left a little bit of a bite scrape because I really realized then that she doesn't want you to do this.
Yeah, in dog language, that would be, you idiot, do you know what you're trying to do here? So I'm going to grab you by the heel and pull you back. Yeah.
I think so. But
that's just remarkable.
Really, so incredible. And I tried telling people that, and they were kind of like, "Well, maybe she was biting you or something." But I knew that wasn't the case. But it's sometimes hard. That's why it's so great you're having the show, because it's sometimes hard to convince people the amazing things that animals do.
Yeah, I think that.
Have these people. First of all, you can buy a T-shirt that says MYOB, which stands for Mind Your Own Business. But that's what I tell people with this. But have them come stand in my office for a day; they'll hear it. Without fail, within a day.
Yeah,
that this kind of stuff goes on.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Glad you called.
Thank you so much, Faith.
Okay. Thanks.
You know, there is this thing, because when we, just before we came on the air, you and I had an exchange about anthropomorphism. You know, that within the science world, there you have to have a lot of care to not turn animals into humans before you have proof that, that this thing has occurred. And so then you were being really sensitive about that. You said, you know, I'm not going to do that. You know, and at the same time, here you are telling all these stories.
You know, if things become anecdotal enough, it eventually seems, at least, like it becomes like it's real. I mean, I'm talking about 42 years of hearing this. So this is not a one-shot deal. And these things go against what I was taught in school and what my younger veterinarians that work with me now are taught in school, that the things that we talk about on this show really don't happen. They happen every day.
There are, of course, stories where people have trusted animals and the animals have turned on them.
Okay.
You know, so that's the flip side of the story, that things can happen for good and for bad, but there, I think we're saying that on the good side, there is no question that there are an awful lot of animals out there.
Sure, and the balance is in the favor of the good, because otherwise everybody wouldn't have these pets.
Well, we'd be dead.
Yeah, that too.
David, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for this show.
You're welcome.
I have another a couple quick stories about our own Pepper, who... is a cockapoo, and a few years ago, our previous dog, a wonderful Cocker Spaniel, died on his 16th birthday, and I felt just inconsolable.
Yeah.
But my wife, after 1 week, said, I cannot live without a pet. So we went up a week later to a place in Massachusetts, and there were five or six families there. They brought out a whole 8 or 9 little cockapoo puppies, and this one just ran straight for me, jumped in my arms, and I held him for a whole hour. It just was so healing, And this puppy did not want to have anything to do with my wife or my son or any other family there. Just, I put him down and he came right back up and it just felt naked without him.
And now he owns you.
Yeah, now he definitely owns me.
You know, I tell yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I just want to say, I think love can be expressed in such small ways sometimes. We have a door with a flap to let him in and out, and he learned within a matter of days. We always leave it, you know, like at a 45-degree angle.
Right.
Whenever he senses we're leaving the house, he rears up on his legs and pushes the door open and then gets out of the way for us.
Who knows what that means? Yep.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for the call. That was
all
a great
right.
call.
Okay. Bye-bye. 203-776-9677. It's amazing the ways that animals find or try to find to communicate with us. And if you're watching for it, you know, sometimes it's pretty obvious. You know,
sometimes you get blindsided. Though,
yeah, I was going to say. So, Deborah Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call. My story, I guess, is a little bit like some you may have heard. When I got married 21 years ago, my husband had been previously married when we got our, and he had a dog, a collie that he had rescued that he had to leave behind with his ex-wife. When we bought our house, she asked us to take the collie, and we were very glad to do that. But the dog would not obey me. He wouldn't do anything I told him to. So I said to my husband, he gets nothing from anybody's hand but mine. No treats, no water, no food. About 3 months after we got him, my husband was working late one evening. It was frigid, below zero outside, raining. A man came to the door. Nordica didn't make a sound, but he followed me. And the screen door was only glass on the top. It was solid on the bottom. So the man didn't know he was there. I told him, no, you can't come in. I won't sign your petition. He grabbed the door and tried to open it and found himself laying on the floor of the porch with a collie on his chest, growling in his face.
I love it.
And I was dumbfounded. First of all, I was scared. I thought the guy was going to call the cops, but he didn't. And I mean, one word from me, Nordica come, and that dog was back in the house. And I looked at the man and I said, I'm terribly sorry, but I said no. And obviously the dog knew no.
Well, you know, again, we don't know what they're sensing, but it's a sense of duty and it's a sense of caring. And would that dog have protected me that day if I was house sitting for you? Probably not.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Good story.
Thank you.
Really good story.
What's interesting about these stories, Faith, and just for one second, is that people are talking to us. You can almost hear them wanting to cry because it really does get you.
Yeah, and there is this idea of you tell people and other people will nod, I understand. And yet there are encounters where people have never experienced this
That's
before.
Right.
And so here it is, a whole array of these stories. And I know, Todd Friedland, you hear them all the time at your practice in North Windham, Connecticut. Thank you once again for being on the show, and I can't wait to see you soon.
It was great to be here. Happy holidays, everybody.
Okay, and your advice is don't buy animals as pets during the holidays.
Oh, yeah, there's other options.
A card in the in an envelope.
And
that
a bowl
says,
and some food.
It's coming.
Right.
It's coming, but not during the holidays.
Too much stress for the animals.
Yeah, too much stress for the animals. Thank you so much. As always, this show is about the richness of life. You can find the books, people, great recipes, value wines and cocktails we feature right now at WNPR.org. Click on programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.